Yeah, my name's Dan, I'm an addict. Wow. Okay, it's great. There's so many people, it's amazing. Who I'm really speaking to tonight is the suffering addict. So if you have been around a while and you've got a sponsor, I'm really not here to... I am, to a certain extent here to talk for you as well, talk to you rather. But it's really, and I have to bear this purpose that I've been shown, this primary purpose that we've got in Narcotics Anonymous, the suffering addict. And because if I don't bear that in mind, and if I start talking about myself for the next, whatever it is, 40 minutes, I'm going to sort of get home later on tonight and just think, what an asshole I was, what a selfish man, and... considering that's how I've lived most of my life, and what I've been shown in Narcotics Anonymous is how not to be like that, it's my duty, to try and carry something tonight. Ever since I can remember, there was something in the way. There was something between me and every other human being, okay? There was, I couldn't tell you what it was. It was the best definition I could ever come up with of what was wrong with me, and it was something. And that was really about as good as it got. It was just this thing between me and you. It was this thing between me and every other human being I met. It was this thing inside of me that I didn't like. And it was something outside of me that I wanted and I didn't know what it was. And it just kept kicking my ass. There was no way that I could sort of communicate. And I tried for many, many years. I really did. In front of doctors, psychiatrists, therapists, counselors, the girlfriend, my mum and dad, the granny, mates, strangers, police, courts, you name it. I tried to get across what the fuck is wrong with me, And I was looking not so much for a solution, but for an answer, something that would tell me what this thing was. And, as a kid, it's like most kids, I was in fantasy land, so it was pretty weird. I thought maybe I was a girl, or, maybe that I was black, or, that I was from another planet, or you name it, just anything other than me. And as I got older, I thought, it's got something to do with the moon. I'm pretty sure that it's definitely something, really. And, I've got a big secret. That's what it felt like, was that somehow I had done something really bad, okay? Really bad, okay? Killed the neighbor's kids and their animals and the neighbors and everybody and was waiting to get caught. There were times in my childhood and my adolescence where that is how I seemed inexplicably to feel. I felt guilty and ashamed and I could not find anything to put it on. And I love what you were saying. You spoke about being this in an institution and they were sort of trying to convince you that it was your mum. I was trying to convince them it was my mum. I really wanted to blame her, because she was one of these sort of people, as you find in your life, who she spent a lot of time telling me what to do. And I was pointless because, I'm an addict and you can't tell an addict what to do. This is something I absolutely know to the bottom of my heart. It's not possible. Anyway, so as a kid, I had a great childhood. I didn't feel like it at the time. I felt this sort of anxiety, confusion. I was ashamed of everything, being middle class. I was ashamed of my parents. The school that I went to was the wrong school. When Thatcher got into power, that really gave me a lot of room to blame it on that one. It was probably still actually quite justified. No, it's not. There was just this something. Okay, and I didn't know what it was. When I was about 14, I got stoned for the first time, and that something turned to nothing, and it was fucking brilliant. Okay, it was. I can't say that I remember. I can see it in my head exactly how it was, but I can't say that I was thinking, yippee, this is the solution I've been looking for all my life. It was just great. I do remember giggling insanely and sort of lying on the floor in a ball with a can of beer that I opened and exploded in my face. And I just thought, this is it. This is the best thing I've ever done. Fuck everything else. This is triumphant. This is wonderful. And before I did it, I was very scared. I was very apprehensive. There was a lot of material around in the sort of early 80s about, you're going to have a puff and, tomorrow you'll be hanging out downtown with a pocket full of your mum's money, waiting for some dealer to turn up and, And I woke up the next morning and it wasn't like that. I felt great. I thought, wow, I want to do that again. I cannot wait to do that again. However, 20 years later, you know, I was hanging around downtown with a pocket full of my mum's money waiting for a dealer to turn up. Sorry. And what was distinct about the second time I did it was that it wasn't the same. You know, the first time I took drugs, the second time I was using them. I didn't really know this. You know, there was a whole lot of stuff I experienced, but I didn't know. I didn't know just before I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous what I was bringing with me was step one. I had no idea. You know, I didn't know that I was an addict with the disease of addiction. You know, that was... Whew, that was all to come. Anyway, but yeah, the second time, there was something different about it. It wasn't so special, but... I began to set something in motion that was always true. It wasn't a question about using drugs for me. Absolutely not. Okay, I'm not here. You know, my use of drugs didn't teach me that I'm an addict with a disease of addiction. Okay, it was me not using drugs that taught me that I'm an addict with a disease of addiction. Because, you see, that's the crux of this. You know, and I've got myself into some, like everybody in this room, into a situation when I'm using that, Jesus Christ, you know, please get me the fuck out of this because I think I'm going to die. You know, that maniac with a knife or, you know, that, oh my God, I'm going over or, woo, woo, oh God, you know, hello. They're shiny handcuffs. You know, it wasn't that. It was what happened when I didn't, when I couldn't get. That Christ, I'd be so bored, I'd be so miserable, I'd hate everybody, I'd hate myself, I would just, you know, fuck you and fuck the world. I just couldn't take it. I didn't like it, I didn't like being me, I didn't like what I saw in the mirror. I just felt completely inferior or completely superior to everyone, and usually at the same time, which is really, really confusing, you know. And I didn't like being me at all. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. There's something, you know, when I wasn't using or I didn't have it in my pocket, I wasn't going to go and score, this something would return. And it got stronger and stronger and stronger. So, finally, if you like, I went to an institution, it's funny enough, down in Plymouth, and I was in there for months and months. And it was boring, my God. I think the only, it's not really a constructive thing, but one of the most significant things that happened there was watching other men die. That I won't forget in a hurry. But when I left, I was, we had this leaving do, and they gave you a medal, and you've got to play some music. And of course I chose Nirvana. I mean, what else would you play when you're walking out of a treatment center? You know, and you know, hugged a counselor. And all that stuff. Anyway, but I'm walking down this little country lane to a safe house, and for the first 30 seconds, you know, I was just feeling on top of the world. It was a bright sunny day, not a cloud in the sky, and you know, I was thinking, wow, this is great, I've done something, I've, you know, wow, what am I going to do now? And the first thought that came to my head was, I know, I'm going to become mayor of Plymouth, you know, like, you know, little ambitions, right? And about 5 seconds later, this thing descended from the sky. Right, self-obsession is now, and I know exactly what it is now, but this self-centered fear fell out of the sky like a suit made of lead and enveloped me completely. It bowed my head to the floor, and I just thought about killing myself, and then I thought, no, I'll go down the pub. You know, that really, you know, that's, if I feel like that's where I'm going to go, it's like the speaker who spoke beforehand. You know, when that hits me, the first thing I'm going to think about is using. Thank God, you know, I was equipped. I didn't know it at the time. I had step one. I had the privilege to be exposed to men and women of Narcotics Anonymous who had step one, had worked the steps, were working the steps, had got a sponsor, were in a group, and knew what they were talking about. You know, they weren't going to bullshit me to death with their fucking opinions, okay? They were taking it straight out of the book. They were straight taking it from experience, right? And I'd had the privilege through hospitals and institutions. If you knew about hospital and institutions, is a sort of subcommittee of Narcotics Anonymous that puts people with a message into prisons and hospitals and detoxes and so on. Anyway, so I had the privilege of listening to these guys. I didn't like them very much. You know, they were happy, joyous, and free, and I wasn't. You know, they had something going on. I certainly did not. You know, I was in a nut house surrounded by people who were dying. You know, and you know, I just thought, you know, yuck. But I sat and I listened. And I'd been to a few meetings, and I knew what I was going to do. I was going to go to a meeting and get a sponsor, and nothing could get in my way. That's what I was going to do. You know, whatever, okay? And I got a grip with this Serenity Prayer, and I'd heard this, I had a share tape, and this very wise man called Earl Hightower explained what the Serenity Prayer meant in two words. And what he said was, whatever and enough. You know, throughout my day, I was just saying, whatever, 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 whatever. You know, you want to kill me? Whatever. You're going to give me some money? Whatever. You want to go to bed? Whatever. Just whatever. And when I got into bed at night, put my head on the pillow, after I'd said my prayers, all I had to say was enough. You know, it was a day done. I've done it. Okay? That one day, forget about it. Anyway, so I went to a meeting and I got a sponsor. I think I'm going to backtrack, actually. I want to talk about using. You know, as I said, I used drugs because I didn't like not using drugs, okay? And the experience that I had was when I didn't use drugs, when I was trying to stay clean, you know, and I really, you know, the first 10 years I didn't bother about it, and then the next 10 years I kept trying. And, you know, doctors, therapists, counselors, chemicals, prescriptions, and all the rest of it. But I found this thing that when I'd you know, get myself into a real terrible state, you know, and doing things that I really didn't want to do, being around people I really, really didn't want to be around, you know, heavy dudes. And doing stuff that it was way out of my league, you know. Why I didn't get pinched, I have no idea, for big stuff at least, anyway. That's not me bragging or anything, you know. I'm sure this isn't a place for war stories, in my opinion. It's a meeting, you know. If you want to hear a war story, I'm sure there's a decent pub around the corner. You know, but it's my experience, okay, that when I stopped using drugs, that's when my life would fall apart. That's when I would do things, and I knew I was doing them, and I just thought, why did I do that? That was really stupid. And I'd feel very miserable. I'd feel very alone. I'd have no energy. I seemed to use up, you know, all the calories I'd stick in my mouth just got expended in my brain from my head whirring round and round and round. And I could not stop myself thinking contradictory, stupid, insane, and boring thoughts. And it didn't seem to make any sense, and I couldn't stop it. And I'd just get restless, man. I mean, irritable and discontent. You know, really bored, frustrated. I mean, when I say bored, I mean, like, I cried because I was bored, you know, miserable. Despite the consequences, you see, I'd start thinking about using. I'd think, oh, you know, I can get away with this. Go and see Paul or Frank or whoever and score. And it would, the thought would come into my head. And it was, you know, when people talk about obsession, it's not like I sort of used to imagine what an obsession was, you know, like you see in the movies or something, where someone's kind of doing something, you know, manically or whatever. It was just that I'd think about it. No other thoughts could penetrate that thought, okay? That's what the obsession is. You know, I couldn't, the consequences of what was bound to happen didn't, could not, would not get through, okay? I remember I was working once, and I went out for lunch. I was walking just around the corner, actually, through Soho. And, I was feeling okay. It was quite a good day at work. You know, girlfriend was quite happy with me for once. And I saw this guy in this alleyway smoking on a can. And I just went, yeah. And I gave him a fiver and said, can I have the next one? And that was that day gone, you know. And it was just this the thought would be in my mind, and pretty much I had to satisfy it because it wouldn't leave me alone. Okay, and then what would happen next was that I'd have that first one, and maybe really the intention was just to have one, just to have a little sneaky peek, you know, like you see in the movies, you know, a little bump, Hollywood style, you know, I want to be a teenage millionaire forever or whatever. And that wouldn't happen. I'd do it all. And then I'd go to the cash point and get some money and spend that, and then go back to the cash point and get some more money and spend that, and then end up pushing like £1.30 across the table, like on my bus fare home, saying, can I see that little crumb there? All right. And the one next to it, and that one that you can't even really see, can you know, and gone. And, you know, I'd want to kill myself, really. And I'd have that long, long, boring walk home. Head bowed down, depressed. I'm scared of old ladies, you know. Really, just doom and gloom, torture and doom. Anyway, the real reason I said it like that is that what I've just identified there is the three parts of the illness that I've got. When I say my name's Dan and I'm an addict, and when I talk about step one, you know, I'm powerless over my addiction, that's what I'm talking about, okay? I'm talking about the three parts of this disease. A spiritual malady, which is a feeling of irritability, restlessness, and discontent, okay? Being bored to tears, or frustrated, okay? The second part of the disease, the mental obsession. You know, I'll have an idea, I think about using, no other thought will penetrate this, okay? The consequences that I would sit and talk to my mum about, or the girlfriend, oh, it's so bad, blah, blah, the therapist, blah, 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 would, you know, evaporate, you know, like snow in June, just gone. They had no substance whatsoever. The thought would be in my mind, and then I'm off. Now take that first one. All the rest of my using is then about my lack of power, okay? The lack of my mind to stop, okay? I do not have it in me. And the reason that is because my body is reacting, okay? Inside of me, it ain't like normal people, okay? Normal people, and I've used with normal people, and they'll, you know, after a couple of hours, they go, whew. Yeah. That's enough. I'm going home. I don't you hate those people, you know. I feel when I was using with somebody like that, I'd feel really ashamed, you know, because I'm sort of crawling around their feet, and they're looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing, you know? Okay, so you know, it's a physical compulsion, right? That's what my using is about. Once I've taken that first one, there is nothing that's going to stop me. I cannot stop myself. I have to hit something harder than me, okay? You know, I'm not... And this is just a disease. You know, this is an opinion, okay? This is not what's in the book. This is my opinion, okay? I'm born with this. It's a genetic inherited condition, okay? My sponsor says this. You know, they say it's a fact. You know, I believe that. That's my experience. And I'm powerless over it, okay? And you see, when I heard this, what was important for me was to match this up. You know, did I tick the boxes on this one? You know, or am I one of these addicts who, I say addicts, and I take that back, actually. One of these people who, you know, if you use drugs because of issues, you know, it's about sorting out issues and then, you know, getting a life and you'll be okay. I'm not like that, you know. I thought I had a lot of issues to deal with, and please, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not here to slag off, belittle, or piss over your issues. How dare I, okay? You know, if you're one of these people who, you know, an addict, who's had a terrible childhood or has had terrible things happen, you know, of course that's going to make it worse. But from my experience, that is not why I use drugs. I use drugs simply because I've got the disease of addiction, okay? And I promise you, me not using drugs was horrible, okay? I'm grateful for using drugs because I would have committed suicide. My experience of not working this program and not using drugs is that I experienced the spiritual malady, the first part of this disease, and it is perfectly okay for that to kill me, okay? It's perfect. That's all I need to die, is that part of this. I don't ever need to put another drug in my body for this disease to kill me, okay? And I'm absolutely convinced of this, which is why I'm a real, you know, big fan of working the steps. You know, get a sponsor, work the steps, get a group, do service, the full package of what Narcotics Anonymous has to offer. How long have I got left? Oh, okay. About halfway there. Anyway, yeah, so basically I try to clean up. I got clean many, many times. You know, cleaning up was definitely a feature of my addiction. You know, I'd run to the edge of the cliff and just go, whoa, and, you know, back to mum and dad's with a bag full of washing, you know, promise the girlfriend sincerely, I'll never do it again. You know, stand up in court, trying to look smart. Well, I did look smart. You know, really trying to make a good account of myself. And I'd experienced that feeling, that miserable, irritable, self-piteous thing. And the idea of using drugs despite the consequences would be the only light in my life. And I'd go and do it. And then bang, I'm, you know, the physical compulsion, I'm off. So anyway, cut to the chase. First meeting I went to was coming up to 6 years ago. And this guy was I was sitting in the back. I was off my nut. I was looking around me thinking, Jesus Christ, you know, people were talking about stuff that, and I just thought, what is that? You know, why are you talking about a washing machine? And, you know, I don't, what? Anyway, and this guy started talking, and I just, my jaw hit the floor. I mean, I couldn't keep my mouth open. I mean, closed, rather. But this guy's message penetrated me in a state, you know, and as I said, I was out of it, okay? And all he did was he talked about his past a little bit in a general way. He didn't get into any specifics. He didn't mention any specific drug. He just talked about his thoughts and feelings and where this had taken him. And then he started talking about a solution. And then at that point, it was sort of like, okay, I think I might have had some kind of hope. Not a lot. But it was weird. And it was weird because for the first time in my life, I identified with another human being. And I mean on a level that I had never, ever done before. You know, and I'm talking about, you know, as a man who I had lots of friends. I used with millions of people. Not millions, but a lot of people. You know, I had school, parents, the whole of my past. I couldn't ever bring anyone to mind that I'd identified as much as this guy. And I remember walking home thinking, how did that happen? You know, how did he know me so well? How could he see into me? What was that? It was weird. I went to a couple more meetings and I didn't hear anyone share like that. I could not clean up. I just couldn't. And I really didn't want to go to Plymouth. I really, you know, I'm a Londoner, and the idea of getting in a car going on the motorway to somewhere where they drive tractors and eat carrots, you know, really, I was not into it at all. You know, I just thought, oh my God. But I couldn't. I just could not get clean. So I went to this facility. As I said, you know, I spent months in there, cleaned up, had a lot of group therapy, which I, you know, whatever, really. And I came out, and because I'd been exposed to people who've recovered from this disease, you know, who'd recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, you know, they weren't running from one self-imposed crisis to another. They weren't, you know, hiding behind their disease, trying to blame their behavior on the disease. They'd actually done something about it. They'd actually got a sponsor, listened to what this sponsor had to say, worked the steps, and put it into action. And they promised me that I could come along to a meeting and I could get a sponsor, and I could walk home that night with the solution, okay? I didn't have to wait for months for this thing to kick in. I could get it there and then. Because, I don't know about you, I don't, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, it's a good idea, it's in the book, okay? But 90 days, you know, I can cause an awful lot of damage and chaos and kill myself in 90 days. I needed something quick. And I went along to this meeting, and I got a sponsor. And he gave me this, you know, well, first of all, I said, will you be my sponsor? Ooh. Actually, I said, and he knew what I was going to say. And, you know, anyway, so he said, yes, it'll be a privilege and an honor. And, which is weird. And, but he gave me this piece of paper. We had a little chat. And he said, look, call me tomorrow, but in the meantime, have this. And he gave me this little piece of paper. And on this bit of paper, these instructions, they're actually in this book. And it was real simple, unfuckable, upable stuff. Okay? Like, get on your knees and pray for a clean day. Read literature. Phone me. Phone two newcomers. Write a list of things that you should be grateful for. And at the end of the day, get on your knees and give thanks. Easy. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science. So I went home and I did some of the things on the list. I couldn't, seriously, I couldn't, I'm not going to, you know, go and sort of pray for a clean day because it was like 10 o'clock at night and I've had one. I wrote this list and, started reading the book and, I just gave thanks. And next day, went and phoned him and he said, yeah, all right, come around. And I went around and we just talked, you know, just two guys talking, you know, just talking about stuff, you know, how I felt, what I was thinking about. He explained an important thing to me. I think he had to, actually, he definitely had to. He explained that I really needed to shut up and listen. If I wanted what he had, then all I had to do was do what he had done. It was really that simple. It wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to be my therapist. He wasn't going to sort of sort out my employment problems or my relationship problems. He wasn't, you know, a private detective. He wasn't going to follow me around. He wasn't a psychiatrist. He wasn't going to sort of peer into my, deep hidden recesses. It was my job to deliver the goods to him, which he explained was simple. If I had experienced step one, you know, if I was truly defeated, and like the first speaker, you know, if I was willing to surrender, if I'd had enough, and what step one talks about, you know, we admit that we are powerless over our addiction, as I pointed out, that for me, that's those three parts of this disease. That's what I'm powerless over. Okay, I ain't powerless over drugs. I ain't powerless over people, places, or things either. It's my addiction. Okay, it's a disease. And that my life had become unmanageable. And what he explained about my life being unmanageable, or rather his, and asked me to relate to it if I could, if I dared, you know, if I wanted to, was really simple. You know, if my life is unmanageable, it's because of what I do, okay? It's what I do that creates the chaos and the problems and the anxiety and the blah, 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 blah. What I do only comes from one place. And those are the decisions that I make in my mind. So it's my thinking, okay? It's my thinking that makes me unmanageable. I haven't got a disease in my feelings. You know, I have pretty much the same feelings I've always had. I have them in a wonderfully different ratio today, but, you know, pretty much, you know, when I'm pissed off, I feel like I did when I was five when I'm pissed off. You know, when I'm happy, I'm Dan being happy. You know, it hasn't changed very much, to be honest with you. But I'm happier much more than I used to be. But my thinking has dramatically changed. You know, in place of this kind of whirring, contradictory nightmare that seems to sort of tear at the inside of my skull, I sort of think, okay, you know, what am I going to do? Okay, this is not good. I better do something else. If I can't work it out, is that my sponsor? Yeah, hi, blah, 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 blah. Or if I can't get a hold of them, then I'll speak to somebody that I trust in my home group. You know, I will pray. I will use this thing called the higher power, which I call God. I will get on my knees, you know, and I did it before I sat down here. And as I said, I didn't want to come up here and regret all the stuff that's coming out of my mouth, you know. I will use the program, the simple, as the first speaker said, this simple spiritual toolkit. You know, if it ain't practical, it ain't spiritual. You know, this isn't about me kind of turning to the fairies at the bottom of the garden. You know, I need something that's as solid as a table, something that's real, something that's going to work. And I've absolutely found that. Okay, I've absolutely found that because I work the steps. You know, I live my life one day at a time. I don't stay clean one day at a time. I stay clean because I've got a solution in my life. I stay clean because I've got a relationship with God. I stay clean because I work the steps. I stay clean because I made a decision to hand my will in my life over in step three and therefore went and did the rest of the steps, okay? That's my experience, okay? I don't stay clean because life suits me. You know, I don't stay clean because I get, let's give Dan £500 or whatever, or let's sleep with him, or give him a car, or, you know, whatever. No, you know, I stay clean because I've managed to find a source of gratitude, okay, that works when I don't get my own way, when life is not giving me the breaks, when the friends die, the cars crash, and the shit happens and I lose my job. I better bloody remain grateful, otherwise I'm going to be one of these miserable people, and God love them, but you know I'm not one of them, okay? I don't know about anybody here, but I can't stand being miserable for very long. You know, if I had to be miserable for 2 weeks, I would pick up. No two ways about it. I'm not built that way. I cannot handle it. Okay. So I worked the steps. It didn't take me very long. I didn't want to do it. But because I was defeated, because I'd suffered at my own hands to the degree necessary for me to have no hope whatsoever, it was easy. I'll say easy. It was simple. It was easy to be motivated to do it. You know, by step three, I started this relationship with God, and you know, when in doubt, turn to God. You know, so when I'm writing my step four and I've got my pen in my hand, you know, all I had to do was look at the pen and say, God, grant me the strength to do this thing I do not want to do, and then it, like, you know, weirdly like magic, and I began writing this stuff down that, you know, like everybody in the room, of course I don't want to tell anybody, you know, of course I don't want to share my horrible, deep, dark secrets. But my sponsor explained that the gold in this program is under those things that you don't want to pick up, okay? The stones, those ugly little secrets, those nasty, dark filth, okay? That actually, when it came down to it, you know what? It wasn't a big deal. You know, when I sort of went, okay, here we go, blah, 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 blah. And I remember I had these three in particular tough nuts, as they were, and I said to my sponsor, look, I've got these things and there's three of them and I want to tell you, but not today. And he looked at me and he went okay, when you're ready. And about a week later I was ready and I couldn't take it anymore, and I just went, okay Julian, there's these three things. I went 1, 2, 3. It was like jumping off a diving board. And just like jumping off a diving board, I wanted to go and do it again. It was such a fucking relief. These things that had tortured me for years, okay? These secrets about me that had plagued me, knocked me totally sideways, were gone in an instant, and they have never returned to harass me. I phoned up my sponsor yesterday, and I said, Julian, I'm doing the share tomorrow. It's, you know, it's quite a, there's a lot of people there, and you know, part of me wants to go completely insane, and you know, but I'm not going to. And we spoke about honesty, and what he said was, you know, that the honesty that you have, the honesty that you bring to the relationship of sponsorship under the eyes of God, if you do that, if you are honest, you won't be sick. If you're dishonest, you are. And because of step one, you know, I'm as defeated today. I'm, you know, about 5.5 years clean, and I'm as defeated today as I was on day one. You know, that defeat hasn't got anywhere. And although I say, you know, I sit here and say, look, I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I had the experience of being in hospital a couple of times and waking up after a general anaesthetic. You know, that's a mood-altering chemical if ever I've had one, okay? You know, for the first period after that, you know, if I put a couple of hours or so, I didn't feel recovered at all. And I had a chemical, I was kicking my ass, you know, but because I had this power, thank you very much, because I had this power and the relationship that I've got with the fellowship and the steps and my home group, I just had to ride it out and knew I was going to be okay. But when I was amazed, you know, because it had been a few years, that having a chemical in my body, I mean, you know, not one of my choosing, that's for sure, and you know, it was medication, et cetera, et cetera. But I just, my head was fucked, okay, you know, and it all came flooding back. And I think the number one thing, the main thing, was gratitude. I was so grateful, you know, grateful for the operation. I was grateful to be in a nice hospital, good people. I was grateful for prayer and the messages of love and hope from my home group members and my sponsor and my family. It was wonderful. But it was gratitude, okay? And gratitude in the way that I have been taught and the way that I understand in Narcotics Anonymous is not a feeling, okay? I mean, it is to a certain extent. You look at the dictionary, it says it's a feeling and an action, but it, for me, it's an action. You know, if I am grateful, that means I am giving, you know, if full stop, okay? End of story. You know, I have got to give. It's a kind of oath, if you like. You know, when I came in here and got sponsored and started working through the steps, my sponsor was assured that from now on, this wasn't about me. Well, after step three, actually, to be fair, it wasn't about me anymore, okay? For a start of the future, and these are his exact words, was none of my fucking business, okay? That I had to get out of the way, all right? And that I was there to be of help to the newcomer, the suffering addict. And if I wasn't, well, for a start, I'd have him to answer to, which, you know, believe me, is not a good idea. But I would be the one that would pay the price. Okay, and I just made so much sense. You know, it's in the literature, and it says it again and again. You know, we have to be this outstretched hand of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we get given this amazing gift, and we only get to keep it if we give it all away. And that is absolutely my experience. Excuse me. That, you know, and this is not stuff that comes, you know, naturally. You know, this, what step one taught me. And listening to my sponsor, you know, who really is a man of a lot of experience. If you're an addict with a disease of addiction, what you're going to find is the problem is your nature, okay? And, you know, that when I first heard that, I knew it, instinctively knew it was right. And it, you know, it made my spine tingle. I just thought, wow, God, you know, that really is exactly how much fucking trouble I'm in. You know, it's a bad news. You know, step one is a nightmare. It's something to get away from as quickly as possible. It's my experience. You know, if you work the steps in a different way to me, there's lots of different ways of working the steps. I'm not here to advocate one particular way. I can only speak about my experience. But it was a nightmare, you know, and that it was something to get away from. And, you know, and I always looked at it as a question, which is, if you are willing to admit that your life, if you're willing to admit that you're powerless over your addiction and that your life is unmanageable, what are you going to do about it? You know, that's the question. The answer, step two. And it was very, very straightforward to me, you know, that because I was willing to admit this fundamental thing and that there was no human power that could help, then, you know, I had to try this thing called the higher power. I had to try this thing, and I knew it was God. Step three tells me it's God, you know. And I'm, you know, I came from a position of being this kind of left wing intellectual. Well, I say that I'm probably boasting a bit actually, but you know what I mean. You know, like, you know, an atheist. You know, Nietzsche, God's dead. You know, but something happened. You know, I was willing to put my arrogance aside, my pride in my pocket, and just give it a go. And that is what I found. That I remember once when I was before I got out of the facility. I'll finish on this. Before I got out of the facility I was in, I was 30 days clean. I just picked up one of these orange key rings, and I was pleased with myself. I've never been 30 days clean, and day 31, my God, I wanted to use. The obsession was stronger than ever. I mean, absolutely terrifying. I could not stop myself thinking about using. So I went and did something that I'd never done before. I went up to the bathroom in this facility, and I got on my knees. I didn't know what God was. I had no idea. So I prayed to a friend of mine who had just died, and I asked Sean, help me, please, if you're up there, because I can't do this. And I went down, sat in the lounge, had a fag and a cup of coffee, and realized the obsession had been lifted. And it was like, wow, okay? And that, you know, I'm sitting here tonight, not because I'm a nice guy, not because I'm, you know, a zealot or anything like this. I've got a big self-interest in this. This keeps me alive and makes me happy, okay? That's why I'm here, you know, and I have got to do the work. I've got to be the outstretched hand of Narcotics Anonymous. It's been a real privilege and a privilege. I know he's not here, but Jason, thanks for asking me. Cheers.